Hello and welcome to the Occult London podcast. This is a new podcast dedicated to exploring magic, mysticism, the Kabbalah, as well as other topics. In this series, we are exploring the symbolism and mysteries of the tarot trumps in relation to the Western mystery tradition. Each episode, we'll be looking at a different tarot card. These are meant to be short introductions, so will not be an exhaustive examination of them, but rather a taster to get you started and thinking about things. If you like the podcast, please follow us and check us out at www.occultlondon.co.uk. And if you can write a review or also do a rating on iTunes, that'd be really much appreciated, as I'm keen to try and get as much impetus behind this as possible so that we can keep on creating content for everybody. Hope you enjoy it. So in this episode, today we are going to be talking about the world tarot card, also known as the universe, which is path 32 and the path of Tao. As usual, we will begin the episode by going through some of the key correspondences of the card, and the text we're using to do that is John Michael Greer's awesome book, Paths of Wisdom, which I cannot recommend highly enough. It's a really excellent book and definitely worth reading if you want to do your own research after this podcast. So let's get started. So the letter of the path, as we see, the Hebrew letter is Tau, which means cross. The name of God is Yehovah Elohim. The astrological correspondence is Saturn. The tarot correspondence is obviously the world. The esoteric title is Great One of the Night of Time. The path text is as follows. The 32nd path is the administrative intelligence, and it's so called because it directs and associates the seven planets in all their operations, all of them in their own due courses. The mythological principle of the path is the descent into the underworld. The experience of the path is travelling underground, descent, burial, underground rivers, crossing a narrow bridge, removal of garments or ornaments, relics of ancient times, the starlit night sky. Entities of the path include monstrous beings, phantoms of the dead, and the watcher on the threshold. The magical image is an arch of deep indigo colour with the letter Tau in brilliant white upon the keystone. The door within the arch bears the image of the trump. The colours are as follows. Atzeluth is indigo, Bria is black, Yetzirah is blue-black, and Uzziah is black, rayed with blue. So let's move on to some of the Kabbalistic attributions and meanings behind the path. So obviously, in terms of the positioning, this path is the first one we come to. So when we're in Malkut, which is the earth where we are now, we have this path connecting right in front of us up to the sphere of the moon, which is Yesod. So this is that literally that very first doorway that we come to. And it is very much a path and a card of awakening, and is symbolized obviously by the letter Tau and the planetary attribution of Saturn. It's very much a path of new beginnings and initiation and changes. And, you know, the concept of initiation in relation to this path is very well represented in stories such as Alice in Wonderland, or also in a more modern day equivalent would be films like the Matrix series. If we look at, particularly in The Matrix, Neo decides to take the red pill and knows that life is never going to be the same again. And that's very much an initiatory journey for him. And I've got a quote from the film here. "This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes." So the person who takes the red pill obviously is a bit like Persephone, who we'll be talking about later. and also who we discussed in our Malkuth episode in terms of descending into that underworld to find that inner light, or that grail, and then bringing it back to Earth. So this path is very much representing this first stages of devotional mysticism, as well as a way into the inner planes and the unconscious mind. So its main lessons are ascending the existence of the causality of things on a higher or deeper level than the physical world, and then descending the acceptance of densest form and the limitation of spirit. So this emphasis of going beyond the physical is also represented by the four holy living creatures on the tarot card. And also you have this image of the hermaphrodite female at the centre. This is symbolic of the elements being united and the forces of spirit descending, but also drawing us up like a tractor beam. And this is described quite nicely by Gareth Knight in his Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, Volume 2, when he says that the path is very much this this first step into that kind of spiritual practice, but also a way of the spirit kind of coming down to our level as well. And he says the following: the path represents the first stages of devotional mysticism as a way into the inner planes and the unconscious mind. So that very much kind of shows us that thing. Another author who has some very good quotes with regards to this is Robert Wang. He's written an excellent book about the tarot, which I will put the name in the show notes. And he says the following: from the standpoint of practical mysticism, the universe may be considered the most important card in the deck, for it is the point at which we begin the process of inner exploration. It's the point where we step abruptly into a reality that may be at once frightening and reassuring, because so much of what we encounter on this path is of our own making. It is on this path that we encounter our own individual personality consciousness. All that is inside our heads, divorced from the security of physical reality. It is the initiation of the personality into its own structure, which is a microcosmic universe. At the same time, we encounter symbols and ideas which are of greater consciousness than our own, and begin to see the ways in which our being relates to a total universal picture. This is a path which can only be successfully travelled by those who have begun to bring their personalities into a self-understanding balance. Those who have not will find themselves tormented by phantoms of their own making and the gates closed to them. On the other hand, those who have come truly to grips with the life experience will find inner help and encouragement at every step. It is on the path of the universe that one discovers the extent to which the process of inner exploration is guided, and particularly the very real protection and assistance given mankind by the archangels. Until one begins these exercises, the archangels are merely an abstraction, something in which one can vaguely believe or disbelieve. And that's a quote by Robert Wang. The title of the path as administrative intelligence is also important, but there is also another name for this path, which is known as the serving intelligence. And this is obviously something I think is quite relevant to bring up, the concept of I desire to know in order to serve is very much a strong concept in relation to the training and work in the mystery schools. And this is something that Paul Clark mentions in his excellent book Hermetic Kabbalah, which I would recommend to people out there. And Paul Clark says the following: it is this key quality that opens the door of the temples of initiation. It is indeed the only safe and effective motive for travelling the ancient path of return. At first, the aspirant, while she may have the desire to serve, usually lacks the skills and abilities. The old Zen phrase, chop wood and carry water, describes her fitness. Thus, the new initiate serves in whatever capacity she can in order to pay for her training. While in a true school of initiation, no charge is ever required for teaching, there are still expenses. In other words, the sincere aspirant is never turned away because of their inability to pay. However, it is a test of the candidate's sincerity and suitability that they voluntarily offer whatever payment they can. This payment is usually made through time, treasure, or talent. It has long been observed that it is part of human nature that which is gotten easily or for free is valued little. It is also a violation of universal law. And that's a quote from Paul Clark, The Hermetic Kabbalah, if anyone wants to check that out. Highly recommend it. So this is talking about service. There's also another service which is kind of going beyond that and is kind of service to mankind and the divine. And this is the, you know, where the biblical quote Jesus is meant to have said when he says, "Let he who will be chief become as a servant." So this path is very much about picking up that mantle and becoming a servant to serve others. And through this kind of sacrifice and willingness to serve others, the door begins to open. So the door to these inner realms begins to slowly open when we look beyond ourselves and begin to serve others. Other things to talk about, obviously Saturn is an interesting attribute of this particular path and not what you'd kind of expect. You'd think, you know, Earth and kind of setting out on a journey, you would expect it to be, you know, potentially a different planet, because especially since Saturn is obviously the planet of restriction. However, if we obviously think about it as being a planet of slow progress, steady planning and goal setting, then it makes sense. So, you know, for instance, if we do want to achieve anything on this Earth, you do need to start planning, you need to think ahead, you need to have the steps in place to actually do that. And also you need the stability. So for instance, particularly with regards to magical training, you know, you start off extremely slow and frustratingly slow as well. So when you first begin doing, you know, magical training, often one of the first things you'll learn is, you know, how to meditate. So it's things like how to sit still, how to visualize, how to control your breathing. And, you know, it's very boring to begin with. And that's why an awful lot of people, when they begin, because they're not doing fancy rituals and, you know, summoning demons or angels in their underground temples, etc., they feel that it's actually, you know, very boring and it doesn't work. But it's this whole idea of building a firm foundation with which you can actually obviously continue up. You need that firm foundation. So as we discussed when we're talking about the tower tarot card, if you build a tower that's not built on solid foundations, which is very Saturnian in the sense of solid bricks, you know, mortar, make sure it's very firm and very strong. If you do that, then you can potentially begin to take on more power. And obviously the aim of this being desire in order to serve. So, you know, you're building this foundation so that you can then become better able to serve yourself and humanity as well. As you've seen, the Hebrew letter for the path is Tau, which means cross. Tau is the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So between Aleph, the Fool, and Tau, we've covered the entire universe. So this is the kind of end of the circle. Tau means cross. It's a T cross, as in the Hanged Man card, but it also can be seen as a Christian cross. And obviously lots of different attributions from that point of view, but it could represent the cross of the elements, but also the cross of sacrifice. So sacrifice from the unreal into the real. Or sacrifice of one thing to become better at something else. So usually in life, if we want to, you know, focus on something, if we want to learn a new skill, if we want to learn how to play the guitar, better or be a painter or learn a new language, we have to sacrifice something else generally in order to do that. So you might have to sacrifice going out to the pub every night or partying with your friends if you want to get good at meditation, for instance, because obviously if you're really hungover every single day, that's not going to be particularly useful if you are trying to do spiritual work. So yeah, these are all just different things it's worth thinking about in relation to it. And it's always worth taking the concept of the Hebrew letter and the path and trying to apply that to your own life. So how does that feel within your own life? What does that mean? Play with those symbols. Imagine yourself in that card. What does it mean to you? Moving on finally to sort of gods and goddesses and mythology. There's lots of different gods and goddesses, as there are with all of them. And I think, all of the cards that we've discussed over the past few weeks do have different attributes that you could fit different gods into them. So again, it's very much about working with your own system, particularly with goddesses. Persephone or Kore is very powerful when working with this particular path, and also Demeter. Obviously with modern archetypes, you've got Alice in Wonderland could be an interesting one to work with. You've got Neo from The Matrix, Frodo as well, I think, from Lord of the Rings. So it's this idea of leaving the comfort of the world or the comfort of your known universe now and going out to seek adventures. So obviously if we look at the Lord of the Rings, Frodo is tasked with taking this ring into the danger of Mordor. And that is very much a good symbol of this journey on the 32nd path. Going back to Persephone, so obviously she is the daughter of Zeus and Demeter, so she's goddess of the earth. The story with regards to her, so Hades, who is the god of the underworld, abducts Persephone one day when she's out gathering flowers by a stream. Her mother then goes in search of her daughter but is unable to find her, and then the grief of Demeter causes the earth to die, so the crops fail, famine comes to the land. Eventually Zeus intervenes and commands Hades to return Persephone. He's obviously not particularly happy about releasing her. He kind of likes having her around. So he forces Persephone to eat a pomegranate seed, which is traditionally the food of the dead. As a result, Persephone has to spend 6 months of the year with her mother, and then the other 6 months she spends in the realm of Hades. And so to the Greeks, the return of Persephone from the underworld symbolises that return of life in the spring. Each spring, as the earth returns to life, some Greeks also, performed a sacred ritual in which, Demeter and Persephone was enacted as well. And it's a really fascinating story and a really strong archetype, which is worth working with. You can do it in, many different ways, either ritually, or you can also work with it in the, using sort of guided visualization path working techniques as well. So that brings us to the end of the episode. To finish the episode, and this is actually the final one of the Introduction to Tarot series, so we've got to the end of it, or maybe it's the first one you're listening to, depends which way you're going through these, but I wanted to end it with a poem, which is by one of my favourite poets, Algernon Charles Swinburne, and the poem is The Garden of Persephone. It goes like this. Here where the world is quiet, here where all trouble seems, dead winds and spent waves riot, in doubtful dream of dreams, I watch the green field growing, for reaping folk and sowing, for harvest time and mowing, a sleepy world of streams. I am tired of tears and laughter, and men that laugh and weep, of what may come hereafter, for men that sow to reap. I am weary of days and hours, blown buds of barren flowers, desires and dreams and powers, and everything but sleep. Here life has death for neighbour, and far from eye or ear, wan waves and wet winds labour, weak ships and spirits steer. They drive adrift and wither, they wot not who make hither, but no such winds blow hither, and no such things grow here. No growth of moor or coppice, no heather, flower or vine, but bottomless buds of poppies, green grapes of precipitant pine, pale beds of blowing rushes, where no leaf blooms or blushes, save this wear out she crushes, for dead men deadly wine. Pale without name or number, in fruitless fields of corn, they bow themselves and slumber, all night till light is born. And like a soul belated, in hell and heaven unmated, by cloud and mist abated, comes out of darkness morn. Though one were strong as seven, he too with death shall dwell, nor wake with wings in heaven, nor weep for pains in hell. Though one were fair as roses, his beauty clouds and closes, and well though love reposes, in the end it is not well. Pale beyond porch and portal, crowned with calm leaves she stands, who gathers things immortal with cold immortal hands. Her languid lips are sweeter than love's who fears to greet her, two men that mix and meet her from many times and lands. She waits for each and other, she waits for all men born, forget the earth her mother, the life of fruits and corn, and spring and seed and swallow, take wing for her and follow, where summer song rings hollow, and flowers are put to scorn. There go the loves that lither, the old loves with wearier wings, and all dead years draw thither, and all disastrous things, dead dreams of days forsaken, blind buds that snows has shaken, wild leaves that winds have taken, red strays of ruined springs. We are not sure of sorrow, and joy was never sure. To die, today will die tomorrow, time stoops to no man's lore. And love, grown faint and fretful, with lips but half regretful, sighs and with eyes forgetful, weeps that no loves endure. From too much love of living, from hope and fear set free, we thank with brief thanksgiving, whatever gods may be, that no life lives forever, that dead men rise up never, that even the weariest river winds somewhere safe to see. Then sun shall waken, nor any change of light, nor sound of waters shaken, nor any sound or sight, nor wintry leaves nor vernal, nor days nor things diurnal, only the sleep eternal in an eternal night. And that is a poem called The Garden of Proserpine by Algernon Charles Swinburne, who lived in the, I believe it was the 17th century, but don't quote me on that. And he writes really beautiful, very ritual poetry that really, really has this amazing rhyming quality to it, but also a very kind of trance-like quality. It's very good. And Dionne Fortune actually used some of his poems in some of her novels, and also in some of her rituals and meditations. So he's well worth checking out. That's all we've got time for tonight. Hope everybody has enjoyed this episode. Please feel free to check our website out at www.occultlondon.co.uk. That is www.occultlondon.co.uk. occultlondon.co.uk. If you can leave a review or do a rating on iTunes, that would be really appreciated, because I'm trying to obviously boost up our audience and get more people listening so that we can give more value. And obviously, please feel free to reach out if you've got any questions. Have a great evening. Thank you.